Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chaf Hei Amud Aleph by the two dots. Where it says, Baminei Rav Hoshaya mi Rav Yehuda. So Rav Hoshaya asked this of Rav Yehuda. Amar lelavlar, he says to the sofer, Tov le'eze shetetze bepetach tchila. So write a get for whoever is going to exit the house first. Mahu, what's the din in that case? Is this considered to be a get lishma? Or does this fail in the get lishma? Amarlei tinitua. It's in our Mishnah. Yeter mikain amar la lavlar tov leize she'erze egaresh. Write the get, and I will decide who I want to divorce. Pasul legaresh po. You can't use it as a get. So just like in the Mishnah, breira fails. So to over here, in your case, breira fails. In both cases, you're trying to choose after the fact, who is the recipient of the get? In the Mishnah, he will decide who is the recipient of the get. Here, in the case that Rav Hoshaya poses to Rav Yehuda, then whoever walks out of the house first will determine who gets the get. But in either case, you have a sense of who's getting the get when the get is being written. And therefore, it's Breira. There's a failure here of Lishma. Alma ain Breira. From this, you would conclude that there is no breira. That's what our Mishnah would bring you to the conclusion. And therefore, the answer to your question is, ein breira. Then, etavei, he now asked him a question, homer the banav. It's a case that we've seen a number of times already. We saw it in the Darim, we saw it in Psachim, which is a person who says to his children, hareni shochetet the Pesach, ami shiale mikem rishon Yerushalayim. Shechna the Pesach on the one who gets to Yerushalayim first. Once the first individual head and the robe of his body enters into Yerushalayim, zacha bechelko, he zocha merits in his portion, umezakeh et echav imo, and then he brings along everyone else through him. Amalei Hoshaya bri, mayin psachim etzel gitin. Why are you bringing this case of psachim here by gitin? And in a second, he's going to explain that there is no comparisons in the case. Obviously, Rav Hoshaya thinks this is another case of Breira. Because over here, the determination of who's Nimneh, who is appointed, who is a part of the Korban Pesach, is determined by this race of the Yerushalayim. So at the time of the Shechitat HaPesach, it wasn't clear who was going to be Nimneh ala Pesach. Only after the fact, whoever got up there first is determined to be part of this Korban Pesach. So it would be another case of Breira. And since it's another case of Breira, that would bring a question against what Rabbi Yehuda concluded before, that we don't say Breira. Because in this instance, it looks like we do say Breira. Now, if you remember yesterday, Tosafot concluded that even according to the one who normally says that Breira works, by Gitin, Breira doesn't work because of the demand for Lishma, Rekat of Law. Rekat of Law sets a higher threshold for Breira. And therefore, even if you hold Breira in other places in Shas, here you would not say Breira. So the truth is that Rabbi Yehuda could have answered that in this case. So you have to conclude one of two things. Either what Tosafot is saying is not Muskam Lakol. Not everybody agrees with Tosafot saying, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda didn't answer in that manner. Or you could argue that you could have answered in that manner, but there happens to be a more fundamental reason as to why this is not a question, not because of that distinction between Gitin and everything else, but rather the case that we're talking about here in Psachim is not even a case of Breira, which is what Rabbi Yehuda is going to say in the end. It says, Ha Itmar Allah. On that Breira, we have a qualification by Rabbi Yochanan. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. G'day the Zarzan b'mitzvot. He's trying to encourage them to be fastidious in the mitzvot, so therefore he encourages them for this race, but not that underlying the race will be the determination of who gets the Korban HaPesach. Dekanami, you can be midayek out of this brayto. Diktani, kevin shenichnas rishon roshov rubo zacha bechelko umizakeh techav imo. That the first one in there gets his portion, and he brings everyone else along, and they also get a portion. Iabart bishlama, if you say, and it makes sense if you say this, Dam Ninhu Miikara, then he appointed them, he assigned them a portion in the Korban HaPesach up front, Shapir, it works well. Elohi Amart, Delam Ninhu, if you said that he never appointed them to be a part of the Korban HaPesach, Lachashchita, Mika mitzmanu. You can't have someone be a part of a Korban HaPesach after the fact, because Shechita is the cutoff point for making the determination as to whether someone is a party to the Korban Pesach or not a party to the Korban Pesach. Vatznan, it's an explicit Mishnah in Pesachim, Nimnin umoshchim yedeyem mimenu ad sheyishachet, that they can join or release themselves from the Korban HaPesach until it is shechted. Because Shechita is the cutoff point, as Rashi notes over here, the drasha, v'imimata bayit miseh, imbao lehimait, if you want to reduce the number of people on it, lehimashech v'imenu miyot miseh, that's only when it is still a seh, b'chiyuto shel seh, while the seh is still alive, you have a right to reduce or add people to the Korban HaPesach. But once it is no longer a seh, meaning after it's shechted, you no longer have a right to join or to release people from the Korban HaPesach. So in this case, we're not even speaking about Breira, because he gave them a portion on the Korban HaPesach up front. And what's the whole purpose of this? That's what Rabbi Yochanan answered. It's not about who is going to be a part of this Korban HaPesach. Everyone's already a part of the Korban HaPesach. Allah, k'dei lezarzan b'mitzvot, to teach them a certain alacrity when it comes to mitzvot, he wants to encourage them to act in this manner, to race, to try to run, to do the mitzvah. But not that it really has halachic ramifications as to who got there first, because it was already determined that they were all part of the Korban HaPesach. Tani Rami Yochi, we have another braita that supports this understanding. Maseh v'kadmu banot banim. There was one year where they had this embarrassing outcome where the girls beat the boys up to Yerushalayim. V'nimtzeu banot zrizot u'banim shvedim. And there we find that the girls had alacrity, and the banim shvelim, and the banim were lazy or they were slackers. The conclusion of the braita is not that the girls are part of the Korban HaPesach, the boys are not. It's simply a description using adjectives to describe their behavior, but not give you a halachic outcome. And so from the braita you see again that this is all about teaching lessons, not about a halachic outcome as to who is joined in the Korban HaPesach. Now, as you mentioned, there's nothing in the Mishnah that says that. Rabbi Yochanan's qualification really changes dramatically the meaning of the Mishnah. And Tosafot points it out here. Other Rishonim point out that the Gemara in Pesachim and in Nedarim has alternative answers to this. This is not the only answer here. The other answers and seemingly the conclusions in those Gemaras is, number one, possibly that Minoy on the Korban HaPesach is only Midrabanan. This Gemara clearly believes that Minui is Doraita. We have to then explain how you get around the problem of Minui Doraita by saying that there really isn't any Minui here. It was all done up front. And this is just a musar or a test for the children to have them be rizim ba mitzvot. But you could argue that it's Minui is Midrabanan. If Minui is Midrabanan, that opens up other possibilities about having people join the Korban HaPesach, or have it after the fact, and have Breira, and have it happen to Mafreya. That opens up many more possibilities. The other answer that's given in the Gemara Pesachim is that we're talking about Ketanim here, kids that are not of age, who do not need to be a part and parcel of the Korban HaPesach. And for that reason, they are joined, even though post-Shechita, pre-Shechita, it doesn't really have an impact on them, because they're not B'nai Mitzvot. So then why are they a part of the Korban Pesach at all? Mishum chinuch, because we want to be mechanech, the children, to be a part of the Korban HaPesach. From here, Tosafot in the Gemara in Pesachim comes to an amazing conclusion, which is that you are allowed to do chinuch even when it violates an Isur Doraita. Over here, there's a requirement of Minoi Mina Torah, and yet we are saying that you can have a katan who is below the age of chinuch, does not need to eat the Korban HaPesach, does not need to be a part of the Korban HaPesach, and yet, we say that he can eat from the Korban HaPesach. So despite his lack of minui, or despite his inability to be a part of the Korban HaPesach, or maybe even a demand by the Torah to be a part of the Korban HaPesach, we're letting him eat from the Korban HaPesach. So in that sugi over there, where this is a part of, Tosfot concludes from here that you could be mechanech a child, even if it causes a violation d'oraita, like in this case. So it's an amazing conclusion of the Tosafot over there. Right, so there, the Rishonim point out that there are other ways to get around the problem. Here, our Gemara clearly views Minoi Doraita, and solves the problem by using Rabbi Yochanan's explanation or qualification of the Braita to say that this is all about Zvizim the Mitzvot. And then again, this answers Rav Hoshaya's question. He thought this was a case of Breira, and therefore challenged Rabbi Yehuda's conclusion that ain't Breira from here. And Rav Hoshaya says to him, there's no Breira here, and therefore it's not a challenge to the conclusion that ain't Breira. So Amar Abaye, Kabay Minei Tole Bedat Achirim, V'Kalpashit Lei Tole Bedat Atzmo, V'Hader Motiv Lei Tole Bedat Achirim. Abaye over here says that there is a fundamental difference in the natures of the Breira that are being laid out over here, and each one of them has a different aspect of Breira. And how could Rabbi Yehuda simply answer Rav Hoshaya, oh, that's the case of the Mishnah, when the case that Rav Hoshaya presented and the case of the Mishnah are actually different cases? And the difference between them is, tole bedat atzmo, tole bedat achirim. The question of who has control over the situation to make the determination of the Breira, of the choice that will be triggered to assign whatever conclusion it is, the mafreya, retroactively. And that the case that Rav Hoshaya poses is a case where it's tole bedat achirim. It's a case where he has absolutely no control over the outcome. He says the get will be for whomever exits the house first. He doesn't control who exits the house first. He has to wait and see who exits the house first. That's called tole bedat achirim. On the other hand, in the case of our Mishnah, he says to the lavlar, he says to the sofer, I'll give the get to whomever I choose. In that case, he does control the outcome. Abaye says, how could Rabbi Yehuda conflate these two types of breira? Maybe there's a difference in breira between tole bedat atzmo and tole bedat achirim. Then Rabbi Yehuda poses the question from Psachim, and Psachim is also once again a case of tole bedat achirim. It's a case where the father has no control over the situation. He simply presents the method, the race, to the children, and then that will be determined by whoever wins the race or gets to Yerushalayim first. That is called tole bedat achirim. Now, as Tosfos points out, it may not be a question on Rav Hoshaya necessarily, because Rav Hoshaya poses a question of tole bedat achirim, and then he also poses a second question from Psachim, which is also tole bedat achirim. So in terms of his view, he's being consistent. His question was about tole bedat achirim originally, and his follow-up question is also about tole bedat achirim. Others suggest that the question is also on Rav Hoshaya, why he accepted Rav Yehuda's answer. He should have challenged Rav Yehuda because it's tole bedat atzmo, and that in and of itself is a reason to question Rav Hoshaya as well, as to why nobody here is making a distinction between tole bedat atzmo and tole bedat achirim. What is the difference? Why should that impact on the nature of Breira, whether it's tole bedat atzmo or tole bedat achirim? Rashi over here says something, and then we'll extend it or we'll explain how this actually manifests itself in other places in Halacha. Rashi says, Dilma tole bedat atzmo, leitlan breira. Maybe when he's still in control, there is no breira. Dimida'atne bereisha, gila bedato, sheya poseach ashtei hasiipim. Because by the mere fact that he creates the uncertainty up front, shows you that he is still vacillating in his decision. Poseach ashtei hasiipim is an expression that Eliyahu used with Bnei Yisrael on Har HaKarmel. And he says, how long are you guys going to straddle the fence and be worshiping the Baal and worshiping God? Either worship the Baal or worship God. Take a pick. Don't worship both of them. And so, similarly, a person who says, I'll decide who I divorce later on, is someone who is still vacillating, uncertain, and therefore, he has not had Gemirat Hadat about how he will conclude this. And because he doesn't have Gemirat Hadat, when he does make the decision, it's clear that that decision is not the mafreya retroactively, but at the time that he makes the decision. Aval zeh shetala b'achirim, someone whose condition relies on other people, gamar b'datei mi'ikara le'ezo shetetzeh. He has gemirat hadat that whatever happens, happens because he no longer controls the outcome, no longer has an ability to determine what the outcome will be. So Rashi over here describes what's called an issue of gemirat hadat. When does a person come to a conclusive decision about something? In the case of tole bedat achirim, he completely accepts whatever the outcome will be and really means it to be the mafreya retroactively because he no longer has any control over it. versus the case where he still has control. The mere fact that he retained control and set it up this way shows that he's not really intending for whatever outcome comes to be the outcome. He's still in the process of deciding, is what Rashi says. And therefore he doesn't have Gemirat HaDat here. A similar distinction is drawn by Tosafot with regards to Asmachta Kanya. When you have a Kinyan that relies on supposed outcomes or someone's belief about what the outcome is, the Gemara talks about there a machloket within what's called Asmachta Kanya. When someone thinks or relies on something to make a Kinyan, and then it turns out that it's false, do we say that the Kinyan went through anyway because they made a Kinyan? So for instance, when they're gambling and they're making a bet that something will happen or something will not happen, and then all of a sudden it doesn't happen and they lose their money. Were they really inclined to give a Kinyan fully when they put their money down when they were betting? Because whatever happens, they'll say they're good with. Or do they really believe that they were going to get the right outcome, and therefore they didn't make a full Kinyan? There, Tosafot makes a similar distinction and says that Gemirat HaDat only happens when something is out of a person's control. Once a person loses control over the situation, they're more likely to have Gemirat HaDat, and therefore Asmachta should be Kanya in that case. Because if a person makes a wager where they have no control over the outcome of the wager, then they're more likely to say, here's the money, I'm done, here's the Kinyan, and whatever happens, happens. On the other hand, Batola B'dat Tatsmo, where he thinks he can control the outcome. So for instance, when they're racing pigeons, and he thinks he can get his pigeon to move faster, or that he can do something to get the whatever is racing to do faster, then in that case, he's Tola B'dat Tatsmo. He thinks he can influence the outcome. And by his thought of influencing the outcome, he retains in a certain way, certain belief that it only will turn out this way, and he doesn't have Gemirat HaDat to give the money. So Tosfot makes a similar distinction within Asmachta Kanya, Asmachta Lo Kanya, as Rashi defines over here with regards to Breira, which is Tole B'dat Atzmo, is less likely to have Gemirat HaDat because of the retained ownership over the decision. And therefore, a person really believes that they either have control or that they're still vacillating and think that they can get to the outcome they want in the end. Versus Tole B'dat Achirim, which is a complete relinquishment of any control. And by doing that, you also have either Gemirat HaDat or you have a full-fledged Kinyan because you know it's not in your hands anymore. So that's the way Rashi describes the distinction over here. Others who describe the distinction over here as to the point of decision. When is the point of decision? Is the point of decision at the time that he needs to decide? Or is the point of decision later on? I mean, in the case of Tole B'dat Achirim, his decision is made now. Whoever comes out first, that is who will be the determined individual. And so his decision is finished. And at that point, when we go later on and find out the information, you can say, L'mafreya, that was his decision. On the other hand, if he retains control B'dat Atzmo, then the truth is that his decision happens later. Whenever he decides to give the get, that is his point of decision, and therefore you can't then say the mafreya retroactively, oh, he really meant this all along, because clearly he made the decision at that point, and therefore the decision point is delayed when it's totally b'dat atzmo, and it's not connected to the original maaseh, or you can't say that it happened retroactively. That's another way to distinguish here. But because of that, Abaye is perplexed by Rabbi Yehuda's answer by saying, I don't understand why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't make a distinction between Tole B'dat Atzmo, Tole B'dat Achirim. And so why is he giving an answer from our Mishnah to the query of Rav Hushaya? So Amar Rava, my kushya, Rava says back to Abaye, I don't see the question. Dilma, demandi le breira, loshna Tole B'dat Atzmo, veloshna Tole B'dat Achirim, it le breira. He says, maybe there is no such distinction. Maybe whoever holds that Breira works, thinks Breira works, whether you're Tole B'dat Atzmo, whether you're Tole B'dat Achirim. The distinctions that we made are real, but someone could believe that despite that distinction, that Breira applies in both of those cases or both of those instances. And that's what Rava suggests. A person who believes Breira works, thinks that Breira works both with Tole B'dat Atzmo and Tole B'dat Achirim. Umad Aleid Le Breira, the one who does not think that Breira works, Loshna Tole B'dat Atzmo, Loshna Tole B'dat Achirim, Leit Le Breira. He thinks Breira doesn't work no matter what. Doesn't matter if it's Tole B'dat Atzmo, doesn't matter if it's Tole B'dat Achirim, he thinks that Breira doesn't work. So Rova overcomes Abaye's question by simply saying, that his question doesn't exist. Baya says there should be a distinction between Tola B'dat Atzma and Tola B'dat Achirim. Rava says, maybe there is no such distinction. Who says that you're right about that distinction? Maybe Breira overcomes that distinction, and if you believe there is Breira, irrespective of that distinction, and if you believe there's no Breira, it's also irrespective of that distinction. So Amalei Rav Misharshia, the Rava. So now we have Rav Misharshia asking Rava and challenging Rava's conclusion here. Va, Rav Yehuda, betole b'dat atzmo, let lay Breira, tole b'dat achirim, it lay Breira. So Rav Yehuda Bar Ilai, the Tano, says that by tole b'dat atzmo, no Breira, tole b'dat achirim, there is a Breira. So tole b'dat atzmo, let lay Breira. Now they're going to do examples. What are the examples of this? Someone who's tole b'dat atzmo, let lay Breira, is in the Tanya, in a Breita that appears numerous times in Shas. This is one of these Breitot where every time it comes about, you say, "Ah, I remember this. I've seen this before." This is Chazara. You can see over here in the Masorat HaShas how many times it appears in Shas. And the Gemara speaks about the same issue every time. It's an issue of Breira that the Gemara brings. And then the Gemara has a similar conclusion in almost all of these locations. Jezal, okay, Deyach, Diaymi Ben HaKutim. Someone who purchased wine from the Kutim. Rashi right away says, isn't there a gzera against buying yain kutim? In that we know that there's a gzera against stam yainam, or buying yain from an oved kochavim. The chachamim also instituted a gzera against buying yain from the kutim. So Rashi says, how is he buying yain from the kutim if there's this gzera? So Rashi simply says, kodim gzera. This is prior to the gzera of the kutim. There was a section of time. Remember, this is a Tanaic work. And the gzera happens in the time of the Tanaim. And so what he's saying is this Tanaic work, or this Breita, was written before that gzera went into place. And that has to do with the Machloket Tanaim as to the status of the Kutim. For their period of time, the Kutim, there's a Machloket as to whether they are Gerei Arayot, whether they are simply converts because of fear that the lions, the animals were killing them, as described in Sefer Melachim, and therefore they converted in order to protect themselves from the lions, but they really were not genuine Gerim. On the other hand, there is a position that they were Geri Emet, that they were full-fledged Gerim converts, and they are real Jews. In the end, the Gzera is a result of the fact that they discovered on Har Gerizim that they had Avodah Zarah there, and that they were worshipping on Har Gerizim, and that they were not practicing like Jews. And at that point, the Chachamim would go Zer on them that they were Ovdei Kochavim, and then that's where this Gzera of the Yayin, and that they're classified as non-Jews, that goes into effect. But it's a later Tanaic decision, because we know there's a machloket amongst the Tanaim prior to that, as to whether they're Geri Emet or Geri Ayot. And what Rashi says is this Breita is prior to that point. That's one possibility. The other possibility that Tosafot suggests over here is that this is a case where he was Mashkiach, where the Jew took care of the wine, or he made sure that there wasn't a problem of Yein Kutim over here, and he's able to overcome the problem by making sure that there was no problem with the kuti and the yayin. Dosewood over here explains why would the chachamim distinguish between yayin ovdei kochavim and yayin kutim, even according to the one who says that they were gerei arayot. Even if you believe that they were not genuine converts, and therefore they really aren't Jewish, why would you then say there's a difference between ovdei avodah zarah and the kutim? Because in the end, they're just not Jews. So he says, mikol makom came to porshim avodah zarah yoter mishar ovdei kochavim. Umachzikim betorish bechtav, since they generally do not worship Avodah Zarah, and they follow the Torah shebechtav, v'gam Elohehem einom ovdim, k'mo sheyosim bebayit rishon, and they did not worship their own gods like they had done earlier. So therefore, chachamim, there was a period of time when even if they were not Jewish, the chachamim did not classify the kutim as being full of ovdei Avodah Zarah, and only later on did that come into play. So therefore, Tosafot says, no matter which opinion you believe, whether they were Geri Emet or Geri Arayot, you could still say that this Gzera of Yein Kutim only came into place later, and that this case is a case prior to that Gzera. So now, he buys it. Omer, Shnei Lugim Shani Atid Hafrish, the two log that I'm going to take off in the future, Harihen Truma. They will be Truma. So now, this individual has an issue because he now has Yin Kutim, which is Tevel. And he purchased it from the Kuti. And for whatever reason, here the Breita does not describe why. And then in other places, Rashi and Tosafot disagree or discuss what exactly is the scenario here where he cannot take off the Trumot Masrot, but there is some reason that he here cannot take off Trumot Masrot. Whether that is because he doesn't have other Kelim, he doesn't have other utensils to segregate the Truma and the Maser from the barrel that he has the wine in. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is it's on Shabbat or Yom Tov where he doesn't have the ability to be Mafrish Trumot Masrot. And therefore, he has to do it in a manner or a way that allows him to separate or segregate it, but not actually separate or segregate it. That suggestion by Rashi is challenged by Tosafot because there are issues here versus Demai, where Ben Hashmashot, you could be Mafrish, whereas regular Trumot Masrot, you can't do Ben Hashmashot. That's what we say every Friday night. So whatever the scenario is, he's unable to separate right now out the Trumot Masrot. So what he says is, in the future, the two log that I'm going to take off, they are Truma. Two log, the assumption here is you have 100 log. Two log is 2%. Truma, the Chazal established that the percentage of Truma that is removed is either 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th. 1/50th is the standard amount, 2%. And therefore here he says, the two log that I'm going to take off in the future are Truma, the 2% I'm going to take off in the future. Asara, the 10 that I will take off in the future, Maser Rishon. Maser Rishon is 10%. 10% of 100 is 10. As Tosafot points out over here, that math doesn't work so well. Because after you took off the Truma, the 2 for the Truma, you're only left with 98. 10% of 98 is 9.8. So Tosafot gives two answers. One is, it's just a rounding. You know, they're just saying roughly 10. Not that they literally mean 10, they really mean 9.8. Or the second answer he gives is much more difficult and troubling. He says that maybe we don't count the Truma as a deduction against the Maaser Rishon. That means that even though you took off Truma for 2%, you still look at the whole amount of 100% when you're deducting the Maaser for 10%. You don't get a deduction for taxes paid already, meaning that the 2% that you paid still is included in the 10% that you have to take off from. Tosafot claims the reason for that is that Truma is really only Chayav Min HaTorah in Chita Achat. Any amount would discharge your obligation with regards to Truma. And therefore, anything you do in excess of that is really voluntary, and you don't have to do it. And since it's voluntary, it's still Chayav in Maser. There are a lot of problems with that logic. There are others who suggest that possibly the Kutim also were Mafish Truma in general. And therefore, they were choshesh that maybe you didn't need to take off Truma over here, and that's why you'd have to take off 10% from the Maaser Rishon, because really you didn't need to take off Truma. There was no necessity for Truma. Those are the answers given to explain why it says 10 here for the Maaser Rishon. Tisha Maaser Sheni, 9 after that are Maaser Sheni. Again, that is a rounding error, unless you believe there is no deduction, because you would have 2% that was taken off of the Truma, 9.8 that was taken off for the Maaser Rishon, the residual would be 88.2, and then you would take 10% of that, which would be 8.82, and not 9. Again, it's a rounding error. It just makes it easier to say 9, because you understand that it's the 10% after the first 10%. Again, unless you think like Tosafot, where the Truma is not deducted, and then it really would be 9, because the first 10% would be 10, get you down to 90, and then the next 10% would be 9, because you don't get a deduction for the Truma. Then the next word is very controversial, umechal. And depending how you pronounce it or what you say, it has different meanings. Rashi says, mechal is lechalel, which means to redeem. That's how you take care of maaser sheni. Maaser sheni in general, the fruits or the items were not brought up to Yerushalayim. Rather, they redeemed them on money and then brought the money up to Yerushalayim because it was much easier to carry and to transport to Yerushalayim. So now when the Brayta over here says, umechal, it means that you redeem the Maaser Sheni. So even though you can't do all the other items and segregate or separate them out, whatever you can do, we ask you to do. So here you can redeem the Maaser Sheni. So why not take care of it if you can take care of it? So even though you didn't segregate out the Maaser Sheni, just redeem it and you'll be done with the Maaser Sheni. Tosafot takes major issue with Rashi because Tosafot says that's only an option when you're speaking about Demai. Demai is produce of an Am Haaretz. And Demai of the Am Haaretz, we give you the ability to redeem it even though you haven't segregated out the Maaser Sheni. You don't have to physically segregate it. You can just say, oh, the Maaser Sheni is in the south. Maaser Sheni is in the north. And then I redeem it. But that is a dispensation for the produce of a Am Haaretz. And It has to do with the nature of the difference between produce of an Am Haaretz and the produce of a Kutim. And this is important. By an Am Haaretz, we also suspect them of not taking off Trumot and Masrot. And over here, we also suspect the Kuti of not taking off Trumot and Masrot. And Tosafot answers that the Gemara believes in many places that the Am Haaretz are Mafrish Trumot and Masrot, and the majority of Am Haaretz were Mafrish Trumot and Masrot. The problem was that it was only a regular majority, not a super majority. So it was like 51% or 55% of the Am Haaretz took off Trumot and Masrot. But that means that 45% of them are not. And therefore, even though you could go after the Rov, because of that large miut, the Chachamim were gozer to take care, it's not really Chachamim, Shiochanan, Kohen Agadol, that was gozer, or fixed the problem by simply saying we could take care of this problem of Dmai, of this uncertain produce of the Am Haaretz in a very easy way where you'll lose just about 1% of your produce. And by losing 1% of your produce, you cover that large minority. So it's worth the investment to protect against the problems of Truma and Trumat Maser, which involve a Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shamayim. So it's worthwhile to invest that 1% to prevent that problem. But Tosafot points out that's only true by Am Haaretz. By Kutim, we don't have that. The Rov of Kutim are Mafrish Trumot Masrot. We believe that Kutim are not Mafrish Trumot Masrot whatsoever. So you're dealing with a very different issue. One is a safek Trumot Masrot, that's the Am Haaretz. And the case of Kutim is Vadai, where you are Chayav in Trumot Masrot. And Tosafot says that mechanism for not segregating out Maaser Sheni and redeeming it is only available when there's a safek about the Truma and Maaser being Mufrash. That is not available when you know for sure that you're Chayav in Trumot Masrot. And this is a case where you're Chayav in Trumot Masrot Vadai, because it's a Kuti. And therefore you have to segregate out the Maaser Sheni. So then, what does Tosafot do with the word Meichal? He explains it in one of two ways. Either Meichal is from the word Heichel, which means to begin. U'meichal v'shoteh miyad. He begins to drink right away. That it's not a description of what happened prior, but it's telling you what you can do now. The Rabbeinu Tam says it comes from the word Mohel. Mohel means a mixture, and Meichal means he dilutes it, v'shoteh miyad, and he drinks right away. But in either one of those explanations, which is taken up by majority, a large majority of the Rishonim, is that the word Meichal is not about redeeming the Maaser Sheni, but about him beginning to drink now and dealing with the issue after the fact. That's Divrei Rabbi Meir, that's the Shita of Rabbi Meir. One other thing we have to address is, how come the Kutim are not being Mafrish Trumot Masrot? Generally, the Kutim follow anything that is explicit and written in the Torah. Trumot and Masrot are explicit in the Torah, so why aren't they being mafrish Trumot and Masrot, especially when you're talking about wine? Tirosh is one of the items that is explicitly mentioned. It's Chayav in Trumot and Masrot Midoraita. So why are the Kutim not being mafrish Trumot and Masrot? So Tosafot gives two possibilities. One is that they do not subscribe to Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. We've seen this a number of times. It comes up numerous times in Shas, which is that the mitzvah of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol, if you read it literally, it means do not put a stumbling block in front of a blind person, and that's how the Kutim read it. Chazal or Doresh, do not cause someone else to stumble in a mitzvah or in an Avera. Don't cause other people to do something wrong. You have to protect other people. You can't take someone who's quote-unquote blind to the Avera or the problem that they're going to enter, and you can't then cause them to go in there. It's true of advice. It's true of mitzvot. It's true in many aspects that the Chazal believe it's not literal, but figurative of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. Therefore, one cannot allow produce to leave their hands that does not have Trumot Masrot removed from it, because then you're going to cause the person who bought it from you to think that the Trumot Masrot were Mufrash, and then they'll eat Tevel. So that's a problem of Lifnei Iver Lo Titen Michshol. So for someone who subscribes to the Drosh of the Chachamim, it's a problem. For someone who only takes the Torah literally, they don't have that restriction. And therefore, they were very makpid on their own about taking off Trumot Masrot. But when they gave it to other people, there was no value in them separating it because they didn't think there was anything wrong with handing somebody produce that was Tevel. That's one possible way to deal with it. The other possibility that Tosfot brings over here is that they are Doresh, the Drasha that appears in Chazal as well, which is that the need for Trumot Masrot to be Mufrashin is only Be'achalto, when you're going to eat it yourself. If you're Mocher, if you sell it, then you don't have to be Mafrish Trumot Masrot. Again, that Drasha also appears in the Chazal, and then it's a question of when you sell it, why do you have to be Mafrish Trumot Masrot? Is that an obligation Midoraita, or maybe only the Rabbanan? But either way, the Kutim then subscribe to the view in the Torah, which is Achila. is when you have to separate or segregate Trumot and Masrot. If it comes to Mechira, if you're selling it to someone else, you don't have to be Mafrish Trumot and Masrot. The obligation will be on the buying party who's going to eat it. So for whatever those two reasons, the Kuti is not separating out Trumot and Masrot. And therefore, in doing so, leaving this individual with a problem that needs to be solved. And again, for that reason, Tosafot says it's different than the cases of Demai, and the word Meichal here cannot mean redeem in this case. So that's the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, Osrim. All of them say that it's not allowed here. Now what is not allowed, seemingly, is that Breira. After the fact, you're going to separate out the Trumot and Ma'asrot. And over here, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon all say it's problematic. Ein Breira. So that's the Shita of Rabbi Huda, where he's Tole B'dat Atzmo. He's in control of the situation. And Rabbi Huda says, no Breira. We don't allow you to do this or use this mechanism. On the other hand, Tole B'dat Techrim, Ile Breira. There is a case, Rabbi Huda says, when he's Tole and someone else's control, that there is Breira D'Tanan. A Mishnah that we're going to say later on in the Masechta. Mahi Ba'otan Ayamim. What is the status of the woman during that period? She is an Eshet Ish. She's a fully married woman for all aspects. And when he passes away, it becomes a get. Rashi claims that the Gemara is not really focused on this part of the Mishnah, but rather on an earlier part of the Mishnah. In an earlier part of the Mishnah, it says, this is your get, me'achshav, imeiti mi'oto choli. If I die from this sickness. So here is an individual, a person who is gravely ill, and is probably on his deathbed, and he doesn't want his wife to be subject to yibum, or for whatever reason he wants to protect his wife, so he gives her a get. In giving her a get, he doesn't want the get to be effective now, because there's a possibility that he'll recover from this sickness. So what he says is, the get is effective mi'achshav, from now, if I die from this sickness. So by doing so, he creates a case of breira, which is, we have to determine later on whether he dies from that sickness or he doesn't die from that sickness. Now, first of all, it's not in his control. That's clearly tole b'dat acherim, because whether he survives this illness or not is in the hands of, as Rashi says, the one who controls life and death. That's in Hashem's hands. And so therefore, it's tole b'dat acherim clearly, and it's a case of breira. We find out after the fact to whether the get is effective or not effective. And Rabbi Huda says you can do it. That's what Rashi says the case is. The problem with Rashi's explanation is Ikar Chaser Min HaSefer. That whole part of the Mishnah, which supposedly is giving us the information, is not mentioned here in the Gemara at all. Therefore, Tosafot says that the case here, and other Rishonim say something similar, is the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says over here, Harik Eshe Ish Lechol Devareha. The proof is from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda believes that the woman is a full-fledged Eshe Ish during that period. The Mishnah asks, when he gives such a get, and the get might go into effect retroactively, what's the status of the woman between the time he gave the get until the time it becomes effective? Because she really is a safek. It's a possibility she's not married. It's a possibility that she is married. So there, the Mishnah has different opinions in the Tanaim. Some say it's a safek. Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is that she is a full-fledged wife until the get goes effective. And therefore, what we learn from Rabbi Yehuda's Shita is he doesn't think the get is effective immediately or retroactively, but rather the moment before he dies. That's what Tosafot says. The moment before he dies, that's when the get goes effective. Others, like the Ramban, suggest that it is when he is still of sound mind. Since he can only give a get while he's of sound mind, until he loses his mind or he is no longer capable of giving a get, at that moment, the get goes effective. So the problem with that is you never know when the moment before death is. And that is a case of Breira, because it's out of his control. It's definitely Tolei B'dat HaCherim, because he doesn't control when the moment before his death is. But the moment before his death, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that's when the get goes effective. That's a clear case of Breira. Something that's out of his control that will only be determined later when the get goes into effect. The reason for that is because you can't give a get Lachar Mita. A get is not effective. Once a person is dead, the relationship or the marriage is severed because of the death. A get no longer has any impact. So the get has to go effective before he dies. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda is seemingly suggesting, is that a moment before he dies, the get goes effective, because she's an Eshet Ish, l'chol devareha. She's a full-fledged wife until that moment. And she, somebody who has an extramarital affair with her would be put to death based on that. So it's not a safek. It's for sure she is his wife. She can eat truma if she's an Eshet Kohen, according to Rabbi Yehuda. And that means Rabbi Yehuda believes the determination of when the get goes effective is up in the air, because we don't know when he's going to die. That's what the proof is from this line in the Mishnah. But you see from here that Tole B'dat HaCherim says there is Breira, But we're told about that small, Rabbi Yehuda says that there is no Breira. But Ben Akutim, he says, doesn't work. And over here, by the case of the Mitah, he says there is Breira and it does work. And it's a good get right before he dies. So here you see that Rabbi Yehuda has a distinction within his position as to whether Tola B'dat Tachirim, Tola B'dat Tzmol, whether Breira works or doesn't. So that's Rabbi Misharsha's challenge to Rabbi. You said that whoever has opinion of Breira or no Breira is consistent. Here we see an inconsistency in Rabbi Yehuda's Shita that can be explained between Tola B'dat Tzmol and Tola B'dat Achirim. Now Rashi over here asks a fundamental question, and Rashi gives an explanation, other Rishonim give different explanations, but how do you know when something is a T'nai, a condition, and when something is Breira? Something is being determined after the fact and retroactively goes into effect. There's a big difference between them. A T'nai, a condition, everybody holds, works. If you make something conditioned on the fulfillment of a certain item, then unless you fulfill those items, then whatever it is doesn't go into effect until the T'nai is Mikuyam. Whereas by Breira, you have this machloket as to whether Breira works or doesn't work retroactively. But how do I know when it's a T'nai, and how do I know when it's Breira? So Rashi over here gives you a distinction. He says, "Ve'ein ze kishar tina'im shadam matne beget shebiyado dekaimam." That this is not like other conditions that are placed in the get, where he has the ability to execute on them. A T'nai is something where you are in control of the outcome. V'da'ato dekayam kishematne alehem. And his, what he has in mind is to do or fulfill those conditions when he makes those conditions. And therefore, when he fulfills those conditions, retroactively, it's a get. That's not because of Breira. That is a condition where he seeks to fulfill that condition and has the ability or control to fulfill that condition. It's not within his control. And number two is, at the time that he makes the condition, there is uncertainty to what the outcome is. And the condition is fulfilled by itself. Whether that's something different between this and Ein Biyado, it's possible, or maybe this is just a reiteration of Ein Biyado, that the T'nai is fulfilled or happens by itself. It's not something that he has to do. Get, if it wasn't for Breira, it would not work. These Gitim would not work because there is a postponement of the decision point or of the effective point. It's postponed until after death. So if that's the case, then it wouldn't be a get, because ain't get achemita, and you need it to work retroactively. So Rashi over here makes a distinction between T'nai and Breira, saying that they are fundamentally different. T'nai is where the individual, number one, has control. Number two is he intends to fulfill the condition that he makes, and it's a T'nai that requires his intervention in order to do it. That is...
When does the get become effective, though?
On a T'nai? Depends on how he formulates it. But the T'nai is something that everybody agrees works, except for, but there's one Tana, Rabbi thinks that you can't make T'naim in Gitin. But other than that, everybody believes that a T'nai works. On the other hand, by Breira, there is a major machloket in the T'naim, in the Amoraim, as to whether Breira works or doesn't work. And what's the difference? So Rashi here describes the difference in this manner. Tosafot over here says that, in our case here, by the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda brings, maybe that's not right, what Rashi is saying. But he underlying this buys into what Rashi says, the distinction between T'nai and the Breira. He says that Rashi is right, and his explanation is correct. He says, "Mikom makom, t'gedivrei Rashi kein hu." What Rashi says is absolutely true. That filu b'tnai tzarich Breira. That even within a T'nai, there is a certain impact of Breira, but it's a Breira that is different than Breira where we have questions about it because of the nature of the Breira within a T'nai. So then, there are others who draw a distinction along the lines of what is the determining factor here. The difference between a T'nai and Breira has to do with what will accomplish whatever the condition is. If you require a Maaseh, if you require an action to accomplish it, that's called a T'nai. If it will happen, or it's simply a determination of fact, that is called Breira. So, in cases like here, where you say, if the person dies from this sickness, there's no action here. The only thing is determination. Did they die or did they not die? That's the determining factor. That's Breira. The other hand, if the person says, if I come by this date, if I pay this money, that is a T'nai because it requires an action by the individual, or even if he assigns the action to another party. If you pay by this time, or if you do this, that is a T'nai because there's a ma'aseh. There's an action involved in it. And that's how some other Rishonim make a distinction between T'nai being something that's determined by ma'aseh versus Breira, which is something that is just a determination of fact. Something will happen, and if that does happen, that will determine what is the outcome here. Who's the first one who comes out of the house? Or whoever I decide to give the get to. And there, that decision is not an activity, it's simply, in his mind, he has to conclude that this is the woman that he's going to divorce. So that's the difference between a tnai and a breira, has to do with maaseh versus lack of maaseh. Tosfot over here also, Tosfot makes one other distinction, which is, v'ish lomar da'ata migitin omeda davar lehit barer bivadai b'hochi, o yechye o yamut. That one of the conditions here in breira is that it has to be something that will happen for certain. Tosfot says that there is a distinction within breira that will determine some difference here, the difference between tola b'dat atzmo and tola b'dat achirim. But someone who does not distinguish between tola b'dat atzmo and tola b'dat achirim, we find stirot between the tanaim. Tosfot over here deals with major stirot between Rabbi Yossi Shita, Rabbi Yehuda Shita, Rabbi Meir Shita. Sometimes they seem to say breira, sometimes they seem to say no breira. So Tosfot loves the distinction of tola b'dat atzmo and tola b'dat achirim and tries to use that to explain many of the differences in the tanaim's positions. The problem is, in many Gemaras, the Amoraim don't use that answer. So why don't they use that answer if that's a good answer? So Tosfot says sometimes they could have used that answer, they just had a better answer. Or sometimes they say maybe that Amora doesn't hold of that distinction. Sometimes he runs into a problem because he finds that Amora making that distinction and still not using it to explain a Tana's position. But again, Tosfot is very wedded to this idea that there is a difference between Tola B'dat Tzmo and Tola B'dat Achirim. Tosfot says, if you don't make that distinction, then how do you deal with Breira in cases where we have Stirot in the Tanaim? So one of the distinctions that Tosfot makes is that even those who believe that Breira works, they only think Breira works when there's going to be a outcome that is certain. It either will be or won't be. So in the case here, either he will die from this sickness or he won't die from this sickness. There are only two options. It's a binary decision. And that decision will be determined 100%. We will know in the end. Either he will die or he won't die from this. But in other cases, like for instance in the case here where you mafrish the trumot and masrot, that is not 100%. It's not clear that he will be mafrish after the fact, the amount that he needs to take off. Because in the end, he may not. Or he doesn't have to. It's not 100% certain that he will take it off afterwards. And there will be breira as to what is truma and what is not truma. Could be that he drinks the whole barrel and has never mafrish anything. So there's a possibility of it never being determined or never having the breira come about. So Tosfot draws that distinction as well, which is many will believe that breira only works when there is a clear outcome that will happen and there has to be an outcome that will be clarified. Either it will or will not be. On the other hand, when there's uncertainty in the outcome, but one of the possibilities is that it will never take place. That's no longer breira, where even if you held a breira, maybe over there you would say there is no breira. That's one question on Rava's position. Amalei Rav Mishashi the Rava. Mishashi poses another question to Rava. If there's another Kirsira, that it's Ravina posing the question. But again, another stira within the Tanaim, which seemingly is solved by saying Tola B'dat Tzmo versus Tola B'dat Achirim, which is Ha Rabbi Shimon, the Tola B'dat Tzmo late Breira, the Tola B'dat Achirim eat Breira. In the case of Tola B'dat Tzmo, he does not have Breira. Case of Tolabidat Achim, he does have Breira. Tolabidat, that's small, late Breira, Hadamran. That's the bright that we just brought about. Alukei Achiyami ben Kutim. The Shita was Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon all agree that it doesn't work. Osrim, they say it doesn't work over there. So that's Rabbi Shimon, but Tolabidat Samal agrees with Rabbi Huda that there is no Breira. Tolabidat Achim, it lay Breira. Where's the case where it's Tolabidat Achim, he does have Breira? Tatanya. Hareini bo'aleich amanat shirtze abo. I am performing Kiddushin with you on the condition that your father agrees. So the Kiddushin can be created in one of three ways. Kesef, Biyah, or Shtar. So by Kesef and Shtar, you can make a Tnai, any condition. By Biyah, he's doing the same thing here. He's performing Kiddushin through Biyah and saying that if your father agrees to this Kiddushin, it's a fine Kiddushin. If not, it's not. Afal pi shelo ratza av mikudeshet. No matter what the father says, the Kiddushin go through. The opinion of the Tana Kama is based on the fact that Ein Adam Oseh Bilato Bilat Znut. Person doesn't do Biyah unless they're serious about the Biyah, and therefore he waived the condition. He definitely waived the condition because he wouldn't have performed Biyah unless he was serious about Kiddushin, and therefore the Kiddushin are effective, irrespective of what the father says. Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Omer Mishum Rabbi Shimon, this is what we're looking for, it says, Ratzav Mikudeshet, Lo Tzav Ratzav Eino Mikudeshet. It's up to the father. The father makes the determination. The father likes it, kiddushin. The father doesn't like it, we don't have kiddushin. This is brera. After the fact, we have now information that is going to tell us or give us information as to whether he is mikudeshin. Now, according to Rashi's explanation of Tanai versus kiddushin, Tanai versus brera, this seemingly looks like more like a condition than a brera. It's not something that we're looking for facts after. We're looking for someone to tell us information and something that's going to control. Doesn't happen by itself, the Tanai. It's something that the father has to make a decision about it. So for Rashi, it seems like this is much harder to make such a distinction versus the other distinction we saw before, which it has to do with ma'aseh versus lack of ma'aseh. Over here, there's no ma'aseh needed. The father decides yes or no, and that's it. So that would be considered brera, not a Tanai. But what Rabbi Shimon says is that this is brera, and it works. I mean, the father gets to be make the determining factor, and retroactively that will determine whether the bia was kiddushin or not kiddushin. And so you see, he holds a brera. So Amarlei said back to him, Rava answers Rabbi Sharsha, ben Rabbi Yehuda, ben Rabbi Shimon, loshna tole bedat atzmo, loshna tole bedat achirim. There is no such distinction here. Itlahu brera. They all hold a brera. So now, that will explain the case of kiddushin for Rabbi Shimon. It'll explain the case of Kitin for Rabbi Yehuda, but you have the problem of Lokeach Yaim Ibn Akutim, where they both say it doesn't work, which seemingly means that they think Breira doesn't work over there. Rav says, no, they hold a Breira across the board. And over there, the reason is given as to why the Lokeach Yaim Ibn Akutim doesn't work. It has nothing to do with Breira, but rather, Amrulo the Rabbi Meir, the Chachamim responded to Rabbi Meir, Iyata Modeh Shema Yibakanot. Aren't you worried about the fact that the flask might burst? The flask might burst, or the barrel might burst. You are at serious risk here, which is that if you do this mechanism to separate off the Trumot and Masrot, and then you begin to drink the wine that's there, then something happens to the utensil that's holding the wine, and all the wine is gone. That means retroactively, you ate Tevel, because you cannot solve the problem anymore, because the wine that you said you were going to do afterwards and segregate afterwards is no longer available. It's gone. So you're at very high risk. So they're saying to Rabbi Meir, you know what the problem here is? It's too risky. And then that person will be drinking tevel retroactively. That's too high a risk. That's why they are oser. Amlehem, the shikvaka. Rabbi Meir says, when it bursts, we'll worry about it. It's very unlikely circumstance that that will happen. And even Rabbi Meir said the shita that choshishin the miut. We worry about a minority of situations here. Rabbi Meir does not say that. It means that it must be such a far-fetched possibility that even Rabbi Meir agrees that it doesn't happen. Rabbi Meir says, we'll deal with it when it comes. It won't happen so often, or it almost never happens. And therefore, this mechanism works. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yossi say, no, this is a possibility, and this possibility will tell us that it's too risky to use this mechanism, even though it'd work. As far as Breyer is concerned, everybody thinks it works. The problem is not a Breira problem, it's a problem of some other issue, this exogenous issue of whether the thing breaks or doesn't break and leaves you in a bind. And so their question is, do we worry about that? Do we not worry about that? And Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yossi said, we do worry about it. Breira works, and you could have done it through Breira, but we won't let you use Breira there because we're afraid of the risk that it might burst. And then the Breira would not be effective because you can't use it. Had it not been for that risk, we would agree with Rabbi Meir and say that Breira works. And that's Rava Shita. Rava Shita is Breira works in all cases according to these Tanaim. The reason by Lokeach Yaim Ibn Akutim is a different reason, have nothing to do with Breira. Tosfot over here says that over there, Rava gives the reason as being that it has to be Reshit Shishira Nikarim. That the reason they don't allow it to go through is because when you segregate out Truma, you have to take off Truma and the residual has to be visible, meaning that you take off Truma, and the residual is what becomes Chulin, and has the Truma removed from it. In this case, it's not happening that way. You're drinking all the Chulin up front, and then separating out the Truma afterwards. When you separate the Truma, there's nothing left that is Chulin, because that was already consumed. And that's the failure. Therefore, Tosfot over here changes the girsa between Rava and Rabba, in order to reconcile between the two cases. But either case, it's an exogenous reason as to why it doesn't work. Breira would have worked, and the whole thing's fine in terms of Breira. But for whatever other halachic reason, they are oser. Whether it's because of Shemi Bakanod, or whether it's because Shiareni Karim, they say over there it's a sur, and you can't prove to me anything about this distinction of Tole B'dat Tzmo and Tole B'dat Achirim in the Shitot of the Tanaim. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Chavav Amun Aleph.